as we come up, I hope all of you have a great Independence Day, 4th of July holiday, when all of us are rightfully grateful of our country and our neighbors. I want to welcome Jim Smith. It's your second one, though, isn't it? But now you've been sworn in as of yesterday. It's been very eventful. We were delayed slightly due to the transition from a governor for a day. You know how transitions go. So we had Jania Harrison yesterday as governor for a day. She did an outstanding job. And now we are here at the Board of Public Works for July 3rd, 2013. I know that there are a number of you here on the wetlands permit. And we will, and that one should take a little while. So what we're hoping to do after some initial business that I know the treasurer needs to do on bond sales and at the controller's opening remarks, I'd like to dispose of the rest of the agenda so that we can kind of clear the decks for this wetlands issue. And I think we also have a state police issue, and Do It, I guess, has something. So anyway, let's begin, huh? Treasurer, I'm sorry, Mr. Comptroller, any opening remarks?
Yes, thank you, Governor. I want to also compliment you on the selection of the chief judge. That's a fabulous choice, and congratulations. Thank you, Treasurer Kopp. Sure, a lot of people are eager to get on with the 4th of July weekend, so I'll be brief. But before we get into the agenda, I did want to just take a moment and reflect on Independence Day. It's such a special holiday for all of us Americans, and particularly for us Marylanders, because we're the birthplace of the national anthem, and that literally comes to life in the firework displays that we'll watch with our neighbors and families. And it's a little ironic that a holiday called Independence Day actually reminds us of our dependence on one another as we join our families and our neighbors and our communities, from block parties to parades to community fireworks displays. July 4th is a day to celebrate what makes the United States the greatest country on earth. And despite everything that we've experienced in the last few years, July 4th is a day that remains nearly unchanged since our childhood. For me, I always look forward to spending the day with some of the finest communities across our state, with them as we celebrate our pride for our country and our communities. So I hope to see many fellow Marylanders tomorrow as everyone takes part in the Independence Day celebrations. I'll be in... Well, I'm glad to see it's rainy today and not tomorrow, because along with a lot of other elected officials, I'll be in the Arbutus Parade and the Dundalk Parade and the Towson Parade and the Catonsville Parade, and et cetera. So, but I will note that there's a new study by Bloomberg that tomorrow is the day that more hot dogs and more Budweiser are sold than on any other day in the year. So with that, I'd like to wish everyone a happy July 4th, and God bless our great country. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. And Treasurer, you have some bond business to take care of, yes?
I do, Governor. Before I do, I do want to also say how proud we are of the judicial nominations, all of them that were made today. They speak to the diversity of our state and the wisdom of the appointer and the wisdom of the women in our bar. It makes us very proud. I also want to say what I know is in the hearts of so many of us. It's a beautiful wet day here, but it wasn't in Arizona. And the tragic sacrifice of those great... Yep. Courageous firefighters, I think, out only to save their neighbors and their property and their lives, to give their lives up for that is extremely noble, especially when we look at the importance of this day and this week. That sacrifice is a real part of our community. Having said that, I know that it will make the day very both tragic and triumphant to know that we have such sterling character in our national fiber. the bonds. We are seeking approval to go to the bond market, as we have spoken of before, on July 24th, with a sale of $435 million in tax-exempt bonds and $40 million in taxable bonds, all of which, as you know, go mostly for schools and educational facilities in the state and other very core public purposes. We are not proposing a refunding because of the volatility of the market, and are reserving that for later. As you know, municipal bond yields have steadily increased in May and June for a number of reasons. And for that reason, we do expect the bonds to sell at a slightly higher yield than in the past year. So our good citizens who want to invest in their states and help build their schools and public facilities may see a very good deal coming out at the end of the month for them. This is historically a good time to be in the market, and we hope to take advantage of it. The comptroller had asked before, and in response to your question, the last bond sale totaled $665.1 million, and the Series A, which was $500 million tax-exempt, sold at an interest rate of 2.333, and the refunding bonds at an interest rate of 1.087. So I presume we will see something north of 2.333, but we don't know how much. And with that, I would ask if there are any questions, and if not, if we could approve the sale.
Item seven
of the Secretary's agenda. Amber Teague, who is the debt manager for the state, is here. There she is. So if there are any substantive questions, Amber's the person who can answer them.
So Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it.
Thank you very much. Amber now can go back to work.
All right. We are going to hold the Secretary's agenda and the Department of Budget Management. Actually, so let's go to DNR, Real Property Agenda.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. Emily Wilson with the Department of Natural Resources. We have 12 items on our agenda today. Of note on today's agenda for us, I would say, would be item 9A, which is known as Heartwood Forest Land Fund, or otherwise known as the Furnace Tract. This is 603 acres over on the Eastern Shore that's adjacent to both Chesapeake Forest and Pocomoke State Forest. It'll become part of Pocomoke. It scored a whopping 127 on our ecological score chart. And it was a nice partnership, really, with private partners and federal partners, including the Conservation Fund and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We were able to leverage some monies in addition to getting a discounted sale. And probably most significant is that the habitat on this parcel supports a number of rare, threatened, or endangered species that are extremely ecologically significant.
Terrific.
Like what?
I'm sorry?
Like what?
Well, I have Jonathan McKnight here from our Wildlife and Heritage Service who can explain some of those.
Come on down. I didn't get a paper map, by the way, Kayla. Maybe we're trying to save trees, but I didn't see the usual. That's all right.
This site actually contains a cluster of rare and endangered species that occur together. The two most significant species on the site are actually somewhat combined. One is a state endangered and globally rare butterfly, which feeds on a state threatened and globally unusual plant species. So these two are bound together. The butterfly is called, it's an elfin. It's fairly nondescript. It's not something that you'd see in the movies, some dinner plate-sized blue thing. But it's a beautiful little butterfly that feeds on this plant. And the fact that we have this cluster of other endangered species occurring together is a pretty strong indication of the unique habitat we've got on this site.
Okay.
So you've got a whole little ecosystem you're saving.
That's correct. And in fact, the acquisition will allow us to give this ecosystem the management that it needs to perpetuate for the long term.
That's cool. Thank you.
Any questions in the Department of Natural Resources Control? I move approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department. Thank you. University System of Maryland. Mr. Evans? No, not Mr. Evans.
Good morning. I'm Jim Sterling from the University System. We have six items on today's agenda and be happy to address any questions.
Any questions?
Not from here.
Controller?
Approval.
Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We move on. We're going to skip over to the Department of Information Technology and instead move directly to the Department of Transportation. Secretary Smith.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
Mr. Comptroller. Madam Treasurer.
Secretary.
For the record, Secretary Smith, representing the Maryland Department of Transportation. MDOT is presenting 16 items. As item 16RP is being withdrawn, the MDOT agenda totals $161,462,645.
Any questions? Mr. Comptroller.
Thank you, Governor. Secretary, welcome. It's great to see you. I'm delighted, as is the Governor, that you're over there. And this is an item that obviously predates any of your tenure, but it's something that you may have seen before in your executive experience. The item is item 2AEMOD, and we're being asked today to approve $21.3 million in additional spending for seven active MTA contracts, and so doing extend each contract by 18 months. And I'm having a hard time in some of these instances figuring out exactly what it is that these consultants are going to be doing. For example, part of the $21 million is $2.3 million for work related to the fabled long-awaited south entrance to the Bethesda Metro Station over in Montgomery County. I mean, this was a big item for years when I was in the legislature chairing the House Transportation Subcommittee. I support a south entrance. I understand it's a value both to the Purple Line project as a way of better connect the existing Red Line station to business and residential centers in downtown Bethesda. I know the treasurer who lives in Bethesda is aware of this. Here's the issue. It's I've been reading and hearing about studies on this south entrance for, I want to say years, it might be a decade. And WMATA released a detailed analysis of this proposed entrance back in May of 2005. So I guess what I want to know is the $2.3 million that MTA is spending on the project, how does it differ from the work that WMATA has already done in the past? Does it actually get us closer to having a south entrance to the Bethesda station? And I guess once it's all done, who exactly is going to be paying for the south entrance? And it's a generic issue that I'm suggesting here, specific on the entrance, but also are we making sure that these dollars are actually needed for this study, or are we simply spending the money?
Heidi?
Oh.
Henry Kay.
Oh, good. Mr. Kay.
Mr. Comptroller, how are you?
Welcome.
Henry Kay from MTA. Thank you. Yeah, the Bethesda South entrance is a project actually where the MTA is doing in Montgomery County, Maryland. It's connected and very important to the Purple Line, but it has independent value, so it's possible that it could be constructed you know, before, during, or after the Purple Line project. The timing of the construction, the design of it, which this contract supports, and the construction itself is dependent on Montgomery County funding. So we have an agreement with the county to do the engineering on its behalf. Actually, with its funding, it will reimburse us for those costs, and then the county will fund the construction of the entrance, and so we will do it at a time that the county makes that funding available to us. So at this point, we have authorization from the county to proceed with final design, and that's what will be undertaken with these particular services.
Okay. Let me just ask the, since you're here, Mr. Kay, there's a $700,000 study entitled Amtrak Reviews for New Stations. New stations for Amtrak.
This is work we undertake jointly with Amtrak, where we share responsibility for doing engineering studies around mostly modifications to existing stations. So Amtrak has a master plan for the Northeast Corridor. It includes some consideration of what they call new stations, but it's essentially enhancements of existing one. An example would be the BWI rail station. And so we want to make sure that we can share, we can pay our part and provide the services that we're obligated under that agreement.
Okay, so it's not new stations, it's existing stations.
No.
Okay, and then $500,000 for a survey of leased Amtrak property.
What's that? That's also part of an agreement we have with Amtrak where we share jointly in capital improvements of their property. So this is, we take a look at property that they own that we use for our purposes. And so, you know, it's a question of its environmental condition, boundaries, opportunities to expand functions on those facilities. These are all questions that are answered through those services.
Well, I have great respect, as does everyone, Mr. Kay, for your work. And I obviously this work's very detailed and time-consuming. The issue that I'm really delighted the Secretary is over now in charge of this is making sure that these consultant contracts are managed properly and we're not simply spending dollars because, you know, there are some hungry consultants out there, because we have all of the needs: cracked sidewalks, potholes, malfunctioning traffic signals, failing intersections, overcrowded transit buses. Just that you and the Secretary make sure that we're spending these hard-earned transportation dollars on things that are going to make it easier for people to get to and from work, that we're actually getting real work on real projects as opposed to just footing the bill for taxis and expenses and hotel rooms and billable hours. And, I mean, you know what the problem is. At the end of the year or at certain points, people say, can't we study something because we have some money? And I'm assuming that you're completely on top of that and rigorous.
Yes, so each of these projects is tracked as a separate line item within our capital budget, and so each of them has to be approved independently, justified independently, before we assign them to a particular civil engineering contract and start to draw down on those contract resources. So the work really starts with the justification of the work itself, and then the contract is secondary to that. So each of these was selected from a much longer list and prioritized, and then is you know, tracked based on its value to our overall system.
Okay, and if you could just give me, other board members, if they're interested, bring me up to date on these seven contracts, what we've actually received for our money to date, and what we're going to get from this new expenditure.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, these are civil engineering contracts, so they support a whole variety of services. We tend to allocate particular kinds of activities to particular contracts. So, for example, we'll assign all the MARC tasks to one firm, all the Metro Subway tasks to another firm because they develop particular expertise in that area. I mean, generally, these are design activities that are advancing projects that are in our capital budget in preparation for being advertised for construction. We track each one through what we call a workforce breakdown structure. So at the beginning of the task, the engineer comes up with person hours by type of activity, and establishes that at the beginning, and then we track the progress of that project against those man hours to make sure those person hours to make sure we're getting our money's worth. That is a number of contracts. There are a variety of projects under each one. I guess you can't tell you off the top of my head all the projects that are assigned to them, but I'd certainly be happy.
What I want to avoid is when I was in the legislature, I remember someone describing confidentially getting a phone call from someone in planning saying, gee, we have some extra money. Do you have something we need to study? And they said, actually, no. And a person said, well, what about studying parking at one of the transit centers? And the person said, that's already been studied by Metro. And they said, hey, we have the money. Let's go back and do it again. And to the extent you're rigorous as far as avoiding spending for spending's sake, I would be grateful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Comptroller, I can assure you that I share your concerns about wasting money, and I think I have avoided that for, I did avoid that for 8 years as county executive of Baltimore County, and I certainly intend to avoid that as your Secretary of Transportation. We all know that the expectations of our public are now going to be particularly focused on transportation because of the recent revenue sources that have been made available to us. We also recognize there is much to be done, and we're going to stretch those dollars as far as we can stretch them, and we are not going to be chasing studies of something that doesn't need to be studied and or has already been studied. So I can assure you that your comments are certainly compatible with the approach that the department intends to take. Thank you.
That's why I'm glad you're there.
Could I ask at some point, not right now, I would appreciate a better understanding of how you all interact with WMATA on these projects that are county, state, and WMATA. I suddenly realize I really don't know. Could we?
Yes, certainly we can do that.
Thank you.
We'd be happy to.
Let me know if the south entrance ever gets built.
No, no, thank you.
Don't hold your breath.
Okay. Anything else on the Department of Transportation agenda items? Controller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on to the Department of General Services. Secretary Collins.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Controller, Al Collins, Secretary, Department of General Services. We have 20 items on our agenda today. We'll be glad to answer any questions you might have at this time.
Any questions, Secretary's agenda? Hearing Treasurer moves. Hold on 1 second.
We have a... So item 11, Manatee.
Yeah.
Yes.
What is that? Item 11.
Item 11. We're asking the for this project, we're asking to sell two lots from this particular property. And if this obviously this property has some history here before the board, the requirement is before we do any transactions here, we seek the board's approval, and that's what we're doing today.
Are there any elected officials here? Today?
We have one representative from him. Yes, sir.
There he is. Come up. Great God. Morning, Governor. Morning, Treasurer. Comptroller. This is, we have been up before you on the note. I'm sorry, Greg Todd, County Administrator from Queen Anne's County. We have been up here a number of times with Mattapique, and we are successfully moving forward with selling the lots there. A few years ago, this board approved the subdivision of the 50-acre lot into smaller lots for commercial value. We have sold. We have two lots on your agenda today. We've got two lots that are already sold, and we've got one that will probably be coming to you in August, and that will just about finalize the lots in Mattapique. So we're really excited to get this project moving. This is a real estate transaction where we actually receive money from instead of expending money, so it's always a good thing. So we're very excited about it.
Thank you, Mr. Todd.
Thank you.
Okay. Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. Let's go back to the first to the
Governor, we could do secretaries and still hold the wetlands.
Yeah, what's the item number?
It's item 4.
Item 4.
7. So what I could... And then
we set to do DBM, too.
You want to do the first?
Oh, I'm sorry, do it. Elliot, that, thank you very, very much. Department of Information Technology.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Mr. Schwanger.
Elliot Schwanger, Department of IT. This morning we have three items on our agenda. I would like to point out item number 2. which is our request of the board to approve notice to proceed on the next phase of our wireless interoperability radio project. I'm not prepared today to present. I understand you would like to hear something, so let me just give you a couple highlights. This project, which is in its third year, is on time, on budget. There are some that would argue that we are even a little bit ahead of from the timeline. But we have completed the first region. As you know, the governor last June made the first call for service for Region 1A, which is the 95 to Carter. We are in the second region, which is the Eastern Shore, which will finish on time at the end of this year. And again, we're here this morning asking the board to approve us moving ahead on the next region of the project, which will be the central area of the state. So those are the highlights. It's all good news.
That's great.
And I'll be happy to answer any questions on that particular item or any other items on our agenda this morning.
Any questions? Department of Information Technology. That's great. So, and next time you'll come back and give us an update on where that is overall. The regions.
We can do that for sure.
If anybody's listening online and they'd like to check it out, go to the goals. Go to the state website. Click on goals. Homeland Security, and I do believe it's either item 1, 2, or 3 on interoperable communications core capacity. One of our 13 now, along with cyber.
Right? Absolutely.
All right. Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We now move on to Department of Budget Management.
Madam Treasurer, Mr. Controller, good morning. There are 17 items on the Department of Budget Management's agenda for today, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Department of Budget Management agenda. Any questions?
Just quickly, Governor, if I could highlight item 11.
Item 11, Mr. Comptroller, is a settlement of all damages and attorney fees in the case of Martin versus Connor. And from the Attorney General's office is Phil Pincus.
Good morning, Your Honors. Phil Pincus, Assistant Attorney General. I served as lead counsel on this case. Also with me today is Mr. Bernard Foster, who serves as Chief of Staff for the Maryland State Police. We are seeking to settle this case. This amount represents full settlement of the case in full, completely. The case is a federal civil rights case, 1983 action pending in federal court in Maryland. We filed a motion to dismiss. Judge Quarles granted that in part and denied it in part, leaving us in a precarious legal position. We began discovery in the case and were referred to mandatory settlement in front of a U.S. magistrate. The U.S. magistrate believed it was in MSP's best interest to settle this case. The Attorney General's office agreed because the settlement amount is comparable to what we would spend, probably even less than what we would spend on discovery and experts in this case. So under a risk management analysis, we determined that our exposure in here was great enough that it made sense to settle this case for an amount that was lower than what we would have to spend just to bring the case to trial. At the same time, even before the case arose, Maryland State Police, and Mr. Foster can speak to this in greater detail, began its own initiatives to eradicate any kind of biased policing within Maryland State Police. Even before this case started, we brought in an outside consultant to look at our policies and procedures and make sure everything was good in his or her view and make any possible recommendations. We are also starting a review committee with external people from outside MSP to look at our unbiased policing policies. The department has also made gone through great lengths to improve the diversity of the department, and Mr. Foster can speak on that if you'd like to hear from him.
Great. I'm sorry, who's Mr. Foster? What is
Bernard Foster, Chief of Staff, Colonel Marcus Brown, Maryland Excellent. State Police. We just sat a class Monday. We started the class, and the diversity for that class was 27%. We had a class that graduated December of last year, and that class, 139, was the class number. It started with 42.19% diversity, and when the class graduated in December, of course, we lost a few candidates. It was down to 38%, but we believe that that is very significant. The class prior to that, the 138, started with 29.7% diversity and graduated at 29.7%. To be able to reach these numbers and have qualified candidates come to the Maryland State Police, we've worked closely with a number of different organizations and some other state agencies. Secretary Chow, we've worked with DLR, we've worked with the Black Caucus, we've worked with the Coalition of Black Maryland State Troopers. We've launched an intensive recruitment effort to be able to attain these numbers. We realize that the struggle for us right now is recruiting and having enough minority representation to be able to compete in the promotional process.
I love the Maryland State Police. I think they're a great organization. But thank you for that update. Nobody obviously supports any bias of any kind. My concern here is we're paying $55,000 to Mr. Martin, who apparently had a traffic stop in 2009, was arrested and charged with handgun possession. And then later on, he was pulled over again for speeding and by state police and given a warning. Subsequent to that, he was arrested by the Philadelphia police for gun charges. And we're paying Mr. Martin $55,000 for bias?
We're paying Mr. Martin because we really believe, based on the action that we were involved in the fact that if we move forward with the case, that we would spend that amount of money, or actually more, in going to trial. And if we were not to prevail in that case, that we would spend significantly more.
Okay. Well, maybe just thank you for your – I have no complaint with what you said, but if you could just convey back to the Attorney General, I wish people would get a backbone over there and take these cases to court. I mean, this is outrageous that someone who's convicted of – or not convicted, but he's accused multiple times of gun charges, he's pulled over for speeding, and he files a civil rights case, and we get apparently concerned about – losing it, and so we settle. And I've seen, you know, a little bit of a series of these things. Go for it. Defend the state.
Mr. Comptroller, we defend the state on numerous occasions. We settle an extremely small minority of our cases, very small. And respectfully, I have a backbone, and all of my fellow workers have a backbone. We try many cases. The two gun charges that you referred to were both dropped. The Philadelphia gun charges were determined by a Philadelphia judge to be unlawful. The Maryland gun charges were dropped because of alleged discovery violations. We had no room to maneuver to use those gun charges to our advantage in this case.
Well, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, this is real money. It's $55,000. It goes to somebody. Certainly looks a little bit odd from the outside that someone is in this situation claims that there's a civil rights violation. Maybe you could summarize later in writing the number of settlements that have occurred, because my recollection is that there have been more than a few, and I get the same argument every time, which is a slippery slope. I mean, obviously, we can settle for the costs that we would move forward litigating. We could settle everything if people were willing to do that. And how do you prevent and deter frivolous claims being brought? And the fact that Mr. Martin is carrying around a gun and committing violations in the state certainly gets my attention.
I agree this analysis should not apply to frivolous claims, but a federal judge determined that the claim needed to proceed and it was not frivolous.
Well,
I would be happy to provide.
Please give me the list of all the settlements, if you could, so that I can be proven wrong, I guess. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Could I ask the Chief of Staff?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Smith. I assume you gave us the statistics on the significant increase in diversity in the ranks, and I assume that we are making progress in diversity, in fact, in the upper ranks in leadership.
Yes, ma'am.
But I assume you told us that because there is a linkage between diversity in the force and change in behavior regarding what some people call racial profiling. Do you think that's actually so?
I think that what we're doing is that it's a continuing effort to address those concerns. I don't believe that we have problems, but the fact that we don't recognize that we have problems, there are things that we can do. Yesterday, the Superintendent's Diversity Council met, and I did a presentation on implicit bias, which is a new concept from a professor at UCLA that presented in Connecticut. And what he said was that we all have biases, and that the important thing is for an organization to be on a path of continuous learning. And in learning, you're aware of those biases and that you can deal with them effectively. Our goal is to become the model for the entire nation with regards to this topic.
That's what I wanted to hear. I appreciate that. I think I'm not so sure it's a new concept as one that's coming back, because I think there's no doubt that we couldn't live without implicit bias. Every time you walk down the street, you assume certain things based on your experience and what you hear and everything. And the trick is, the important task is to become sensitive to that fact. And I think that can happen with anyone, regardless of race, color, creed. We all live in the world. So I would say the increasing diversity is terrific and is appropriate and should be done. But increasing training and awareness of bias on the part of everyone is also has to be pressed at all times, regardless of the degree of diversity of the force.
And I would
that's
just
what I hear you saying.
Yes, ma'am. I would just like to add that our command staff, from the rank of captain to lieutenant colonel, is 36% minority.
That's excellent. Thank you.
That's the highest it's ever been, is it not?
Yes, sir, it is.
And
that's really important. Governor, just
one more request. Could you update me on Mr. Martin's status? As far as I noticed in 2009, the Philadelphia gun charges were dropped, as you said, for some reason. Has there been any subsequent criminal sanctions taken against Mr. Martin?
No, sir. There have not.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Department of Budget Management agenda items? Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by Comptroller. Yeah. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. All right. Secretary's agenda. Every item except item number 7.
Let me just, because I do draw some.
Okay.
This morning, the Secretary's agenda contains 19 items and one report of an emergency procurement. We are withdrawing item 9. You have already ruled on item 7, the bond resolution. We want to hold item 4 until the conclusion of this, so the rest of the items you can move on or discuss, and we will hold item 4 until this vote.
Okay. Repeat again the items you're withdrawing.
We're withdrawing 9 only.
Only 9.
Right.
We are holding item 4. Any questions on the balance of the Secretary's agenda item? Namely, the Secretary's agenda sans 4, 7, and 9. Any questions? Controller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. All right, that should limit us now down to the mother of all wetlands permit. So let's do this. Anyone that's not here on the wetlands permit is free to go. We're going to take a one-minute pause just to change over the crowd. So, secretaries, if you're not here on the wetlands permit, you are free to go back to your points of origin. Thank you. I'll be right back. This is one of those anomalies where we have to rule on a wetlands permit. It's where your Board of Public Works sits as a steward of state property.
It's not a regulatory question.
Mediator of condominium disputes.
Proprietary function.
Okay, and so we are on item number?
Four.
Item number four of the Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, I'm Dolan Moore, Wetlands Administrator for the Board. Before you today is Wetlands License Case for Queen Anne's Landing Marina. Case number is 11WL0208. The applicant has requested an authorization from this board to reconfigure and improve an existing marina. The marina is located off the Chester River in an unnamed basin on Kent Island. It is the marina for the community of Queen's Landing. Currently, there are 62 slips, and there will be no increase in the number of slips. The proposed scope of work is minimal and is as follows. To construct a 20-foot by 3-foot pier extension at the channelward end of Pier C, north end of Pier F, construct a 26-foot by 4-foot pier extension and a 25-foot by 2-foot finger pier. On the south end of Pier F, construct one 22-foot by 2-foot finger pier and one 25-foot by 2-foot finger pier. Install one support pile and place 8 mooring piles. MDE reviewed this proposed project for over 2.5 years. Many of the issues...
Sorry, excuse me. Do you have anything on paper or anything that shows in a spatial way? I mean, this is all very... I'm sure if I replayed the tape, I'd understand it. But is there anything we can see, what it is, what it's going, what it's proposed to be? Okay, Larch.
I have plans.
Okay, so that's what it is now.
Yes.
These are the numbers. These are showing actually the numbers.
So what is it now? Which one is it now?
This is Pier C, Pier A.
And what's being proposed?
Here, see, is being proposed. Here's supporting piles. Here's more piles being installed here. On it.
So this is what's proposed. Here's what's proposed.
And here is another extension proposed. More piles being proposed. Yeah. And then these drawings are just showing.
Again, with the current. This is the current.
Yes. And this here, again, this is being proposed on C, we talked about, and F. These plans are fairly hard to read.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then these were based, these were aerials just to show, again, that there are the 62 slips that the department required.
Okay. So no additional slips, but a reconfiguration of the slips, having them protrude further out into the water rather than...
Well, they will not protrude channelward anymore. You know, they're going to go laterally. And all. And there is, in this basin, there has been what's called a harbor line established for both this marina and Castle Harbor Marina, which is in the other side of the basin, so that they can maintain the fairway.
Okay.
Again, as I was saying, the MDEs reviewed this project for over 2.5 years. Many of the issues were not related to tidal resources that were brought up by the opposition. And in my opinion, MDE has completely vetted and addressed these concerns in the report and recommendation. Again, the only elements that are located in the waters of the state before this board for consideration are the two pier extensions, the three new finger piers, the support pile, and 8 mooring piles. The applicant is requesting to be allowed to exercise the riparian rights. I would respectfully request that this board grant this request. It is determined that this project will not result in any negative impacts to the tidal resources or movement of vessels in the marina basin. We also have present staff from MDE and the Office of Attorney General. The president of the Homeowners Association is present and has wished to address the board. We also have other people speaking in opposition of granting the request. Throughout the review process, there has been questions about the notice of interested persons. And please be advised that I mailed the department's report and recommendation to 95 people. Of that, U.S. Mail returned 18 as non-deliverable. The notice of today's meeting was mailed to 77 people. My interested persons list starts with the public hearing, which was conducted back in 2010. At that public hearing, 25 people attended. Those were the first people that I notified. And then the second group was a petition that was presented by the opposition to the department of another 70 people. So that was the 95 people that I notified with a report and recommendation to allow them a 28-day comment period.
And this has been going on for 2 years. The answer is, for the record, the application was closed before.
When the application was filed, September 27th.
Thank you. Ms. Childs, what is our criteria for reviewing this? I mean, what is the standard?
I think you need Mr. Frederick. She's a procurement advisor.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Frederick for counsel, he has recommended that your staff receive that 19-year review.
You can come on up to the microphone, ma'am.
But I think he can give you that advice very simply.
Hi, good morning. Greg Bedard, counsel to the board. The standard for the board's review as set forth most recently in the Cahoe naming case is for the board to determine is limited to the nature of the actual wetlands license, specifically as set forth in the environmental code to focus on the board is required to focus specifically on the ecological, economic, developmental, recreational, and aesthetic values presented in the specific wetlands license and the impact of the proposed activity, in this case the 250 to 300 square feet of represented by the reconfigured marina. So that's a standard that's set forth most recently in the Cahoe.
That's a pretty broad. Those are pretty broad standards. So we can consider the ecological, the economic, the developmental, the recreational, the aesthetic values
presented by the proposed activity and the impact of the specific license. So as the wetlands administrator stated in his remarks and as MDE stated in the in its report and recommendation, that impact is minimal, and that both that the R&R, the report and recommendation, MDE's document, and the wetlands administrator's report focus specifically on the limited proposed activity, and that's the standard that's set forth here.
And so in order for us to deny the application, we have to be convinced by what standard that...
Convinced that the proposed, the limited proposed activity is essentially not in the best interest of the state and does not fit within the parameters as articulated in the memo.
And who holds that burden?
I'm sorry, sir?
Who holds that burden, the applicant?
Well, that's the board standard of review. In approving the license. So the applicant has proposed this activity to reconfigure the marina, and the board standard, the best interest of the state standard, is to look at the very limited proposed activity and determine whether or not it's consistent, looking at these factors, whether or not it is, in fact, in the best interest of the state, looking at the ecological, economic development. I know it's quite broad, but the proposed activity is actually, and the board standard is actually quite limited.
Well, we have to be convinced beyond just by the bird, preponderance.
Well, yeah, the applicant has riparian rights to
right.
Do activities.
So I would think that.
So the burden would be to show you that exercise of those riparian rights did not comport with the ecological, environmental standard there. But the right, the riparian right of an owner who owns property next to the water. And then the people who oppose it would convince you that actual activity, which is, 250 square feet of extra pier instead of, I think, what we saw in the Four Seasons case.
I'm sure Judge Wilner can correct me, but it would seem to me that the burden then would be on the opponents to convince us by preponderance of the evidence that there is something offensive about this use when it comes to the ecological, economic, developmental, recreational, or aesthetic values of place. Okay. Mr. Comptroller?
Could I ask a question of the counsel?
Please.
You're not with the Attorney General. You're our counsel.
That's correct.
Okay, great. Are there outstanding court cases right now concerning this?
Yes, as I understand it, and I believe the AG's office is here to address it, but there are outstanding issues related to the Maryland Condominium Act and some other issues not directly related to the wetlands license presented here.
Okay.
So the answer to us, yes.
And in your opinion, is there any harm in waiting to see what happens with those court cases?
There's no harm in, well, I think that's a good question. I think Kahabmanian says that we are strictly limited to looking at the proposed activity. It's my concern would be those issues presented by the Maryland Condominium Act and those issues that are being currently investigated by the Attorney General's office are the type of issues that the court in Kahabmanian says the board should not bear in mind when considering the issuance of the wetlands license. So that would be my concern. And certainly in NDE's report, they're satisfied that the existing OEG investigation does not impact this particular license. We had a briefing with the attorney with AG's office who's actually taking that investigation. She's given us her confidence that what she's doing should not have an impact on the board's deliberations here today. So,
okay. Well, with all due respect to the court,
sure.
I don't particularly agree with their decision that you cite, so that's an opinion, and glad to take it under advisement.
But my recommendation to you and to the board as your counsel would be all those other issues presented by the relate to the Maryland Condominium Act and the ancillary investigations are the types of considerations that the Kahabmanian court said should not bear into the decision-making of the board.
In their opinion.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Chief Judge. Okay. Madam Treasurer?
Is there someone here from the Attorney General's office?
Yes.
You've got two representatives. One represents the Department of Environment, and is the Consumer Protection
No.
We had asked that the Consumer Protection be able to attend, but apparently not. So anyway, Emily, why don't you introduce yourself for the record?
Hi, good morning. My name is Emily Vanieri. I'm an Assistant Attorney General for the Maryland Department of the Environment. I did speak with the Assistant Attorney General for the Consumer Protection Division earlier, I guess last week, after the pre-board meeting. She attended the pre-board meeting. And just to clarify one thing that Greg said, there are actually, as far as the Attorney General's office is aware, there are no open court cases involving any of these parties. There are no county enforcement cases that are pending. There are no Attorney General court cases that are pending. What is active and what is pending are complaints from some of the opposition to this license, complaints to the Consumer Protection Division of the Attorney General's office, and I think Karen said that there were five cases open right now. Those complaints all have to do with whether there have been alleged violations of the Maryland Condo Act. None of those investigations have to do with the marina or this wetlands license in any way.
That was my question.
Okay. Is that all? Okay.
Mr. Warren's presentation is here.
Would you like to hear from the
Chairperson? Yeah, let's hear from the opposition. Who's opposed? Want to come up and tell us
why? Mr. and Mrs. DeLasic were the first people to register with their name.
Yes.
Mrs. DeLasic, you want to come to the stand and introduce yourself, please?
Thank you.
I'm Sue Ann Chester Schley-Lassick, and I live in Queens Landing. And good morning, Governor, Comptroller, and Treasurer. Queens Landing consists of 349 condo owners on Kent Island, contiguous to the Queens Landing Community Marina. Although Dalton Moore said it was Queens Anne's Marina, it's really called Queens Landing Community Marina. It is important you recognize the community does not own the marina. The 62-slip marina is owned by SCM and 16-slip purchasers. SCM, Inc. receives the income from the leasing and selling the slips, not the community. I am spokesperson for Queenslanders Landing Homeowners for Transparency, QLHFT. We are a large group of homeowners in Queens Landing who look to our board to follow the Condo Act bylaws and work in the best interest of the community. I'm here today on behalf of QLFT asking for your help. 349 Queens Landing homeowners have been denied their rights because MDE withheld information from the Board of Public Works regarding this wetlands license. March 15, 2012, MDE Secretary Robert Summers wrote to QLFT promising, quote, upon receipt of MDE's report and recommendation, the board, BPW, would distribute the document to a list of interested persons comprised of contiguous property owners, et cetera, which would be us. That did not happen. In fact, according to BPW's files, which we have here and we turned into your staff, the MDE report was never even sent to the Queens Landing Association, Council Unit Owners, 500 Queens Landing Drive, or even to the 349 contiguous homeowners. It was only sent to the Queens Landing Community Marina, which is a separate entity, which is not owned by the community. With no response from MDE, and we tried, we questioned BPW, and Mr. Gregory Bedward, counsel, kindly directed us and copied Mr. Gary Setzer to provide the list from MDE of the Queens Landing homeowners. No list was ever provided. We then submitted a PIA request to MDE, as we knew they had the list in their file since 2011. We saw it there when we went up for PIA visits. MDE was then forced to provide 12 pages of 349 mailing list Queens Landing homeowners. They had it in their files all along and never turned it in to BPW. This is really inexcusable for a government agency to withhold this important information. What's wrong with our process? Where is the transparency here? So we are today before you. We have lost confidence in our board of directors, who, by the way, Ms. Karen Stone put our president, Mr. Bergsman, and the board, they're on 3-year probation by the Maryland Attorney General because he violated the Maryland Condo Act 11109.1 and held closed meetings about the marina for a year. We have lost confidence in our privately owned marina that has had many county and state violations, and they've made many representations to the community. You know, but worst of all, we have lost confidence in MDE, the government who should serve the people of Maryland. We are asking you today to please do the right thing and just for now delay the vote on this approval of the wetlands license until all 349 contiguous Queens Landing homeowners have the opportunity to receive and review the MDE report as Mr. Summers promised from MDE. Thus, then we Queens Landing homeowners and citizens of Maryland will be afforded our rights as promised. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have here, by the way, Mr. Dalton Moore's list that he sent out that I gave to your staff. Nowhere on here was it sent to the association or to the 349 homeowners. If you'd like it, your staff has it. Thank you again.
Thank you. Okay, Ron Alessic?
No, I'm next. You want to go first? Hey, good morning, Governor.
Hi.
Madam Treasurer, Comptroller. My name is Robert Foley. I live in the community of Castle Marina, which is adjacent to and part of the complex of Bayside and Queens Landing. I'm also a contiguous landowner to the Four Seasons project, which we all know and love. My son Brian is a Queens Landing homeowner, and since his work prevents him from attending this meeting, he asked me to represent and speak for him as an interested party. My son wanted to express to the board the concerns regarding this license application. The marina at Queen's Landing has been a source of contention in the community as long as I can remember, and I am a former slipholder of that wonderful marina. Although it is contiguous to Queen's Landing community, it is privately owned. After speaking with neighbors regarding the proposed marina construction, my son Brian realized that not all 349 homeowners have been notified properly regarding this construction. My son's condominium is directly facing the marina. He and several of his neighbors are very concerned that any reconfiguration of the marina will affect their view, their property values, and, of course, the crowded conditions that presently exist. It is completely unfair to the homeowners of Queen's Landing that they were not properly notified of the proposed construction in the marina. Homeowners in Queen's Landing are being silenced on this issue by not being notified of this hearing and having a right to comment. I'm sure if all Queen's Landing homeowners were notified of this proposed work in the marina, their voices would be properly heard whether they would or would not approve of the project. They have a democratic right to be heard. Thank you.
Thank you. Dave, who's next?
Good morning. My name is Ronnie Lassick. I live at 15G Queen Anne Way, Queen's Landing, Chester, Maryland. I'm going to cover not everything I plan to cover, just to the fact that I want to get to the heart of the matter here. What is at stake here this morning, ladies and gentlemen, is not the board's approval or denial of the wetlands license. What's at stake is the trust, integrity, and transparency of our governing officials. Trust, integrity, and transparency are the foundation and the heart of the democratic process, be it at a local, state, or federal level. Citizens should not be denied access to government public documents that are not classified. They should have the ability to review and have access to all information that could affect them. In this case, I am referring to MDE Secretary Robert Sumner's March 15, 2012 letter that was provided to your staff members. Mr. Sumner stated in that letter, and I quote, upon receipt of MDE's report and recommendation, the board will distribute the document to a list of interested persons comprised of contiguous property owners, local officials, individuals, etc. Unfortunately, only a few of the 349 contiguous homeowners who make up the Queen's Landing Council of Unit Owners were sent and received the MDE report and recommendation. The real issue that has to be questioned today is the process. The process Secretary Sumner's promised in his March 15, 2012 letter, which you have in your possession, was not carried out. Thus, the 349 Queen's Landing homeowners were denied their rights to review the MDE report and express their opinions on any unresolved issues surrounding this license application, whether they approve of it or not. I am respectfully requesting that you, Governor O'Malley, Comptroller Francho, and Treasurer Kopp, simply delay the vote until all 349 contiguous homeowners in Queen's Landing have an opportunity to review and comment on the MDE report. That's all we ask for. Thank you.
Thank you. Stan Ruddy.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
My name is Stan Ruddy. I'm a new member owner of the Queen's Landing community, and I was here to ask you first. Kind of behind the eight ball a bit. I am late joining this, but I understand that the applicant bought 40-some slips and that subsequently, a few years later, about 2010, paid a fine to authorize that it is 60 slips, and now he's asking for permission to extend that even further into public waters. I was able to see the report recently, but I do think I should have gotten the MDE report, had the opportunity to respond to it. I think there are a lot of errors on it. It's not a community marina. It's a profitable, singly owned marina. It is not open to rent by owners of the condominiums. It is being leased to other people that don't live in the community, family members of the owners of the marina. They are being sold, and the condo fees are being kept for those condominium issues. Condo fees for the marina are being kept by the owner, whereas they have access to the condominium clubhouse and facilities. So I also ask just that the decision today be tabled for future, and that all 350 owners of the condominium be notified of this report, sent a copy of the report, as well as the adjoining, there's a marina next to it. Last thing, the settlement agreement for these, the upgrade to the 60 slips was signed by a continuous landowner who was also a county commissioner. So there is unresolved issues that need to be addressed before this permission is granted. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Anyone else in opposition? Yes, have you heard? Mr. Bedwood, what about the claim that the MDE report should have been Mr. Lasik's was reading from? Was it reg? Was it statute?
No, statute section 5204 of the Environmental Code, which requires MDE to compile a list of contiguous property owners and send notice of the public hearing to the contiguous property owners and appropriate local officials. But that issue aside, I think in my mind there's a question as to whether or not all 350 residents are contiguous property owners. I walked the property myself yesterday, and so there's a marina, and in between the marina and the actual property, there is common property owned by the homeowners association, and the president of the homeowners association, did get a copy of the NDE report and a recommendation. It's my view that the Wetlands Administrator complied with that portion of the statute, and certainly with the regulations governing notice and issuance of the report and recommendation, which is his responsibility.
So you believe he did comply with notice by merit of having sent it to the...
to the president of the HOA, which is the contiguous, looking at the strict reading of the law and what contiguous means, which is a contiguous property owner. The Alasis respectfully are arguing that each member, each unit owner, is a contiguous property owner. That's not something that I agree with. I do think that the, strictly speaking, from a legal perspective, the contiguous property owner is the HOA because there is common property between the unit and the marina itself, and the president of the HOA, the representative of unit owners, did get a copy of the report and recommendation. In addition, Mr. Moore did comply with COLMAR as it governs the issuance of the report and recommendation, and did send a copy of that document to individuals who attended a public hearing, also to anyone who made a comment during the hearing's comment period. Those individuals also got a copy of that report and recommendation. So both with respect to the statute governing issuance of the notice and COLMAR, I believe we're in compliance.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Controller?
Is there anyone from MDE here?
Sure.
Mr. Setzer.
Who?
Yes, sir.
Oh, great.
Okay. Gary Setzer, Wetlands Administrator, Wetlands and Waterways Program.
Thank you. This item has kind of a checkered past.
Absolutely.
But 3 years ago, it was on the board's agenda, and then it got pulled. Apparently, because of this notification issue.
That's correct.
And did the applicant provide false documentation to you guys that everyone had been notified?
The original the application that you're talking about was formally withdrawn. Part of MDE's review required the applicant, and at that time it was the marina was privately owned, and the applicant was Queens Landing Marina LLC. Instead of contacting each community or a condominium owner. He explained to the department that there were other avenues available to notify the condominium owners. So we told him that he could notify the condominium owners through its board. We subsequently found out that that didn't happen. And as a result, MDE met with the applicant. We convinced him that the best path forward was to withdraw the application, which he did. MDE rescinded its report and recommendation, and basically the process started over again. Under this application, MDE notified 349 property owners.
My concern is with the applicant, how given that passed and someone mentioned 40 units becoming 60 slips or something, how can we trust them to honor the terms?
The applicant is different on this application. There was a series of transactions in 2009 that basically transferred ownership of a strip of property along the bulkhead and the piers and platforms associated with the marina to the Queens Landing Community Marina LLC, which is a component of the Homeowners Association. So it's actually a component of the Condominium Association, who is the applicant.
And you said all 349 were notified?
MDE notified all 349 in its public participation process.
Notified them of
The application.
That's a different mailing.
It's a different mailing. That's right. The way the process works is MDE completes its public participation component, puts together a report and recommendation, which in this particular instance is quite substantial. It's, you know, taken 33 months to get to this particular point. We've addressed issues that are clearly outside the purview of the Title Wetlands Act, but we told the applicant, we told the community that we weren't going forward until all the issues were satisfied as far as the department was concerned, and we submitted that report and recommendation to the board. The board has separate or different regulations in terms of notification with the report and recommendation, and therein lies the confusion. Secretary Summers' statement in his letter quotes 5204, the environment article. That's the definition of the department's interested persons list. The board has a regulation which sets out a different mailing list for the report and recommendation. When the issue arose, it was MDE's recommendation that the board submit the report and recommendation to the 349 property owners just to avoid the confusion. In fact, if it would have helped matters, I would have suggested we send it to the entire population of Kent Island. I mean, we've been dealing with this for close to 4 years.
So did you or didn't you? Then?
I'm sorry?
So did you or did... I'm confused. So did you mail them the MDE report? You mailed them a notice that
not the report, Governor,
was made, but did you mail them the notice pursuant to what I guess I understand to be a state statute governing the board's hearing of these matters?
Right. There's two mailings.
Uh-huh, right.
One mailing is part of MDE's application review process, mm-hmm. and that mailing, the department mailed
to all 349.
To all 304, as well as public officials. We submit the report and recommendation to the board. From there, it's the board's responsibility to move the report and recommendation to its interested persons list.
But its interested persons list is a different definition.
Its regulations are different than what's in MDE stat, in the environment article.
So everybody did what their regulations said they should do. But the question is whether, I would think the question is whether that inconsistency ought to be looked at and corrected.
Did think 349, you may have received it, depending, I mean, who did receive it, depending on the definition of contiguous owners, but let's go with the 349. What happens then is, Mr. Moore, your wetlands administrator, those 349 are notified that there's an application.
Got it.
If you want to hear anything about this, if you want to be on our list, if you care about this, let us know. Email us, whatever, let us know.
And then the second one goes out to those who indicated an interest.
Who testified, who showed up, who have responded to that. And so it does get limited, and in this case, it got limited to 95 and 349. I think Mr. Bedwood's secondary point was that if you're looking at a law that says contiguous owners have to be notified that technically that the condo, individual condo units were not contiguous owners. But the main thing is that the boards, Rich, take you from this, let's let everybody know there's an application, and let them know they can participate, and let them know that they can have their name here, and we will let them know what's going on. Down to more manageable. Here's 95 people who have cared about this at some point. But as we see, 21 of them will return to us, which we don't know. I mean, address-wise, U.S. mail-wise, because they weren't there anymore. So that is the confusing. You're right. There is. It's not easy to have these two different standards.
So what do you want to do?
I think there's an applicant might be here. The applicant might is Mr. Bertschman here, who would like to talk about.
Okay. Well, let's hear from Mr. Bertschman.
Yeah, he is the applicant who has asked for a wetland license. So, he's representing, I believe, the riparian owner of the property.
Yes, but I'm not sure I can answer the questions about
maybe, introduce yourself and then
excuse me.
Why do you want a wetland? Why the Queens Landing Community Marina LLC, why it wants this wetland license?
Thank you. May it please the board. My name is Mark Bergsman. I'm the president of the board of directors for the Queens Landing Council of Unit Owners. We're the governing body for the Queens Landing Condominium Association and the Queens Landing Community Marina LLC. The Queens Landing Community Marina LLC was formed to operate the marina and shield the Council of Unit Owners from liability. It is a live entity organized and existing under the laws of Maryland. It is the proper applicant for the license, and that was fully vetted by the Consumer Protection Division and the Office of the Attorney General for the State of Maryland, and that's on pages 16 through 19 of the report and recommendation. I am the only person authorized to speak on behalf of Queens Landing. Queens Landing is in favor of the license for three primary reasons. Safety. The license is designed to improve the circulation of boats coming in and out of the marina, particularly VDOC and CDOC. Second, it completes the marina transaction. The license that we're asking for the modification, is a key component of the agreement between the Council of Unit Owners, Queen Anne County, and the seller of the marina. We've been waiting for 3 years to get approval so that we can complete this transaction. And the third reason is increased community participation. When this is approved and the modifications are completed, we have two slip owners that are going to put boat lifts in so that they can continue to use it and increase their usage. And we have two, maybe three, unit owners who intend to buy the slips on the reconfigured pier. The license does not impact the tidal basin. It has no negative impact on navigation. It maintains the status quo. There is no issue from a wetlands perspective. That's why all the government bodies that have looked at this have approved the license. Queen Anne County, the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and the Consumer Protection Division of the Office of the Maryland Attorney General. The opponents have not raised one relevant issue, not one fact that relates to the ecology, the economy, the development, the recreation, or the aesthetics of the marina. And that's why Queens Landing respectfully requests that the license be approved. If you have any questions?
Thank you. If you must, if you would like to, sure.
Thank you. I want to just clarify something when Mr. Setzer was speaking. Here's what happened. The application went in 2010, In 2011, there was a public hearing at the library, and 349 people were notified. So that did happen, and MDE did have that list. What didn't happen is, according to Mr. Setzer's promise, 349 people would get the MDE report and recommendation. So that's that. The 21 that were returned, by the way, were not Queenslanding. A few were the people that moved, but it was Castle Harbor Marina. A lot of them were returned because of the post office box number apparently was correct. So then the other thing is, on the list I just gave you, nowhere is there a mailing to Mr. Bergsman, president of the Queenslanding Association. There is a mailing to the Queenslanding Community Marina. So I don't know where they're telling you that it was mailed to the president and he didn't tell us, because according to the PIA that Mr. Moore gave us, nowhere on that list was it mailed to our association. It was concealed from our association. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have a question of MDE that I'm sort of confused after the last MDE.
I think it only MDE.
Just the question of the ownership, which confused me a bit after the this gentleman. My understanding is that the marina was owned by the first party.
Correct.
And is being sold to the second party, which is the creation of the Homeowners Association.
Queenslanding Community
LLC.
Marina LLC.
Has it been sold?
That transaction has occurred. The one part that may be confusing to you is after that sale occurred, there was nothing in that transaction that was established to eliminate the property rights of the individual who originally owned the marina. So what happened was, is the marina was subdivided into 62 mailboxes, which represent one, each represents a slip, and a 63rd component, which is what is owned by the Queenslanding Community Marina LLC, which includes the strip of land along the bulkhead and the structures of the marina. The 62 mailboxes represent the slips, and the majority of those slips remain in private ownership with the original property owner, who owned the marina outright from 1994 till 2009. So that's probably where the confusion is. The transaction?
I think it's simpler to look at it this way. The Queenslanding Community Marina LLC owns the marina. The Council of Unit Owner controls the Queenslanding Community Marina LLC, because there's three members on the marina's board of directors. Two of those directors have to be in the Queenslanding board of directors. So we control the marina, but we don't own it. The marina is owned by the Queenslanding Community Marina LLC.
So the issue was raised at some point. I read a statement that the condition in the sale was to reconfigure the marina. Is that
yes, that's correct. As part of, there's a kind of a universal or global settlement between Queen Anne County and the prior seller and Queenslanding Council of Unit Owners. We wanted to make sure that the marina, Queen Anne County was challenging the prior owner as to whether it was a community marina or a commercial marina. Well, when that challenge was and the court said it was a commercial marina, we didn't want it to be a commercial marina. So we got involved, and we had a universal settlement, and it was a community marina, 62 slips, that was to be reconfigured according to the license that came in this way.
Right. But it hasn't been reconfigured.
No, because we're waiting for approval to put the pylons in.
Right. So the status of that settlement is what?
Well, we're proceeding. We're waiting for approval so that we can complete the transaction. Everything's gone through.
So there actually was a sale, even though the sale was part of the settlement that
yes.
that was conditioned on a reconfiguration?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the sale is conditioned on reconfiguration.
So last question, if I could.
Yes, sir.
Is the 2010 applicant connected in any way to this applicant?
No.
No? That's true. I'm sorry, I didn't ask you, but if I could.
The original applicant owns slips in the marina, owns mailboxes that are basically the slips in the marina. But he is not the applicant. The applicant is the community.
How many slips is that previous applicant?
About 38.
38 of the
71? Right. The Queens Landing Council unit owners does not have the money to purchase the marina. So we were deeded the ownership, and we got the control. But we weren't deeded. It went to the Community Marina LLC, which we control. And then the prior owner had the slips, and then he was going to sell the slips, and that's how he was going to get paid for the transaction. So he owns those slips. He's trying to sell the slips, and he has to sell the slips to owners of Queens Landing Condominium Association in order to retain its status as a community marina.
Hmm. Mr. Comptroll, at the end of the day, I think at the end of the day for the board, the important issue is that Queens Landing Community Marina LLC, which is a component of the community government, is the proper applicant. They're the riparian property owner, and they have the right to make the application to the board for the improvements to the marina.
Right. And my only question is it a new application, or is it the old players? And
I
think what I've learned today is that it's a mixture.
Yeah, but it was a new application. The original application in question was withdrawn.
Okay. I'm not going to comment on this.
Was the head of the condo association notified or not?
Pardon?
Was the head of the condo? So the head of
the
condo.
Yes, because the notice went to the Queens Landing Community Marina LLC, so we got it.
So, I mean, the question, what the opponents were saying was that there's no evidence that the head of the condo association was given notice.
Yeah, we know. That is incorrect.
Well, not the notice. Morse sent the report, right? Sent the MDE.
No, we have the report. We have the report.
All right.
It
wasn't sent to you directly.
Yeah,
I think we need to have one.
So was that, I don't know.
Other than the governor.
So it was sent to the head of the condo association. It was sent to you. So the applicant is the condo association.
No. It's the Queens Landing Community Marina LLC. That is the owner.
Okay.
It is, but that's controlled by the Council of Unit Owners.
And so did the Council of Unit Owners, did they get the MDE report?
Yes. Yeah, it went to the Community Marina LLC, and therefore I got it.
Yeah, the question is, did the homeowners get it? I mean, y'all.
I think that Mr. Setzer said that they sent notice to every homeowner.
No. It's two different. Let me ask the question of our counsel. Thanks, Mr. Bedard. So there are two different notice requirements.
Yes, sir.
One is that you have to send to the 349 people once the application is made.
That's correct.
The other one is for this board when we're about to approve an application that the copy of the report go to, that MDE's report go to all the contiguous property owners.
No.
Sorry,
if I may. No, you're right on the first point. The second point is that under the regulations, the Wetlands Administrator is supposed to send the MDE report and recommendation to anyone opposed to the project, who expresses opposition to the project at the public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you attend the public hearing and you're against it, and I'm just quoting from Colmar, you're against it, you get a copy of the R&R, and that's in Colmar.
wetlands administrator's practice has been, if you attend the public hearing, irrespective of whether or not you are for or against it, you get a copy of the R&R. Mm-hmm. Also, if you make a comment during the public hearing's comment period, after the public hearing, you call in and say this, that, the other thing, he will also send you
a copy. And did we do that?
Yes.
In this case?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Does she want to be heard again? Sure. Absolutely. That's all right.
I know this is worse than Four Seasons, believe me.
No, not worse than Four Seasons. In fact, I'm half inclined to remand this to Judge Wilner altogether and see what he has to say before we rule.
Yeah. Through all the confusion here is, you know, who owns a marina, who doesn't own a marina. Mm-hmm. I think the fact of the matter is that, regardless who owns a marina, that the Secretary of the Department of Environment told us as citizens that live in Queens Landing that all, once MDE provides a report to BPW, BPW will distribute the R&R report to 349 contiguous homeowners.
Okay,
so that has not been done.
Okay, he misspoke then. He shouldn't have said that. He was confusing it, no doubt, with the application process instead. Okay. Any other questions on this? I have not heard any, I mean, in looking at the standard of review, while all of the, I mean, I appreciate you making the procedural argument on the for the postponement and that the notification process has not been followed, while admittedly it is confusing and was somewhat confusing for us to untangle here, there appears to be two requirements of notice. The one at the point of application, the other once there is a report and recommendation from MDE. It would appear from everything that our counsel has shared with us that I'm convinced that those procedures were in fact properly followed. With regard both to the notice of the application and also with regard to providing the copies of the report and recommendation to those who testified against or had any comments. I believe that the notice requirements and the notifications that all of that was followed properly. Having reached that conclusion, I am further, in listening to the testimony, I have not heard by any evidence that this does some sort of damage or harm to the ecological, economic, developmental, recreational, or aesthetic values involved in this particular wetland. And so I am prepared to move approval of this permit at this time. Is there a second?
I heard the governor. I have one more question. If just in terms of process, I don't disagree with what the governor said. I am concerned about this inconsistency in the process, and I think we should actually alter it so that the two lists coincide. But I don't doubt that what was done according to the properly according to regulations. If it were deferred as is requested to assure broader notification, so you do that and you notify the people. You've had the hearing already. The administrator has come to a conclusion already. I'm not sure what is next in the process. I mean, so everyone is notified. You've had the hearing, and you've notified everybody that there would be a hearing.
Correct. And typically what, you know, I see in these cases is we have a broad number of people in the beginning, and that number continually wedges comes down. In this particular case, not only the 25 people that were at my hearing, I also was then informed during my 14-day review period of the R&R that there was another petition that had been presented to MDE of 70 people during their initial comment period. When I was informed of that, I did get a copy of that petition from MDE. I did a second 14-day mailing to those 70 people. So I mailed it out to 95 people. I think, you know, I went beyond.
I don't doubt that you mailed it out to 95 people. And I don't doubt, at the hearing, were there opponents and proponents?
There was five people who spoke against it out of the 25.
Okay.
Yeah, very rarely at my hearings do I have, other than the applicant supporting it. A lot of times it's people come in there to just get more information because all they
right.
see is a paragraph.
Okay. I guess the question would be what you would learn from here, since you've got, I mean, this is a very limited question.
I understand.
The board asked him for the item and to send it out to the 250 people who didn't get it. What we would do would send out the same report recommendation
right.
and say you can send comments back, and you can know that the Board of Public Works is going to consider this at such and such a meeting, and you can show up for another hearing. There would not be another public hearing by
right.
the Board
right.
of Wetlands Administrator. It would give an opportunity for 250 apartment owners who don't know, who may not have on record, do not have a notice on record, those 250 people would now read the thing and be able to write you all a letter and show up at your
next. See if there is anything on this specific question before us, not all the other stuff, but just the impact of the reconfiguration.
I was going to say, I think at the end of the day, you know, we still have the same answer, that there is no environmental impacts. This, again, is 300 plus or minus feet of decking on an existing marina in 8 piles, no new channel or encroachment, no resources. In the end, my report would say the same.
So then it is simply a question of making sure that everybody knows and has read the material and why you came up with the conclusion that you
right.
came up with. Do we have that flexibility to be able to do that?
What do you mean, to delay it and mail it to all of them? So you all haven't been keeping the report from your neighbors, have you?
No.
Okay.
There are 180 of them who do not live in the community.
Although that would appear to make them not contiguous.
Well, if I could, Governor, jump in and just say I would be happy to support the treasurer if she wanted to postpone it. I think what you get from that is transparency. And, obviously this is an intense issue for the local people there. So I don't have any problem with that.
Okay, let's do this. I will then withdraw my motion. And the treasurer is making a motion to postpone this and to direct the administrator to pay the United States Postal Service whatever it costs.
God knows it needs it.
To mail the, God knows it needs it, to mail to the remaining 349, to do it forthwith and to get this back on the agenda however quickly we might. Yes? How quickly can we get it back on the agenda? I'm serious.
Well, it's going to take a little while. I don't know that we have a list of 349.
We don't have an update list.
You actually have the final.
Well, the secretary.
I have the list that was compiled.
So
good.
So the board of us instructed us to send it to the same 349.
Yes.
If you could get a new list from
See, that's what's going to take a while.
Yeah. All right. Well, that should take all of about 1 hour.
We can do it.
Okay.
I can do it, sir.
Yeah, do it as quickly as you can and get it back in here as quickly as you can.
Yes, sir.
And let's get done with this.
But
okay.
I would ask you folks to understand, really, what we are focusing on.
Right.
You have a lot of concerns. I respect that. But that's not the function of this board.
Right.
We understand.
Okay. Thank you all very much.
Thank
all right.
you.
This concludes our meeting of the Board of Public Works. That motion, by the way, from the treasurer was seconded by the controller and approved. Thank you.